And welcome back. Thousands of veterans in this region are taking advantage of medical facilities offered here by the Veterans Administration Medical Centers. It's a daunting task to meet the needs of those veterans requiring medical attention. There are almost 20,000 of them. Dr. Lynn Welling is chief of staff for the St. Louis VA, a post he has held since July of last year. And Dr. Welling is joining us in studio. So nice to have you with us. Thanks for
Good afternoon. So. It's a honor to be here.
You know, I hate to start with a negative, but we'll cover the full spectrum here. The VA has been undergoing, and particularly medical facilities, undergoing so much criticism lately. How is it weathering that storm?
We're doing great things. The criticism comes because we're doing the right thing. Secretary Shinseki, who a man I greatly admire, probably about a year and a half ago, made a decision to all of those vets with Agent Orange and with Gulf War Syndrome issues that had been kind of pushed aside because the science wasn't there to prove that that was a fact, said, enough of this nonsense. We're going to take care of you. And because of that decision, overnight, we created backlogs in our care. But we still provide the safest, outstanding, best care that's around. And because of that decision, now we've opened it up to everybody who's earned it and who deserves it.
But in some cases, it appears to be getting worse. That is, the time the claims are processed and the times that people can actually come in for treatment seems to be actually getting longer, in some cases more than a year, in many cases here, more than a year. That doesn't sound like it's getting better.
It's actually just the opposite of that. When it started out, our care was good, and then due to Secretary Shinseki's decision to open up the accessibility to all of those persons who were not able to get into our system before that, then it increased. But since it's increased, we've been working down the backlog. We worked down a backlog from 5 years. It's down to almost a year now for some of these. And these are claims. These are not necessarily medical benefits. These are claims for compensation. So when they get to me, to our facility for the medical care, yeah, we've got some work to do on getting people in. Our goal is same day.
These are some of the figures that our staff has come up with here. Claims down by about 25% here than had previously been the case, down from 20,000 or so to about 15,000. But the waiting time is increasing. The claim processing time more than a year. Is there a contradiction here?
Well, yes and no. VA is a big organization, and there are multiple different areas of it. And I believe what you're talking about is the claims process, which is owned by the Veterans Benefits Administration, the VBA. Mm-hmm. I belong to the VHA, the Veterans Health Administration. And so we work in concert together to work those claims down. We have what we call compensation and pension claims, which is what the veteran goes through to get those benefits that are due them. And when they get to me, our time frame right now is about it's under 30 days. I think this morning I saw in our report it was 26 days from the time a claim gets to me that we get it processed and back to VBA. Hmm. We were down below 20 days, and then we got this big onslaught from Secretary Shinseki's decision, was up to 60 days. We worked it back down again. So we've got the processes in place to take care of the vets.
Well, I also see here in my notes that delays in response just to the inquiries are pronounced.
Again, I can only talk to the VHA side of the house.
That's a different wing that we're talking about.
Yes, sir.
On NPR recently, there was a rather extensive investigative report done which talked about an overwhelming number of opiates being prescribed by VA medical centers across the country, including St. Louis. St. Louis not in the top tier, but relatively close to it. What can you tell us about that and why this is going on and what's being done about it?
I can tell you it's not just the VA. It's a national epidemic. You mentioned that I had been here for a year. Yeah. Prior to that, I was in the military for 34 years. I was the commanding officer of the Naval Hospital in Jacksonville, Florida. Northern Florida, northeastern Florida, was called one of the pill mill capitals of the world. Opiate narcotic abuse, prescription medication abuse is a national phenomenon, and actually President Obama has actually declared a war on this process. We have a very active program where we take each one of our patients that come in, we scrutinize what they're doing, we look at the medications they're on. Often our patients come in with 20, 30 different medications, and we try to reduce that to the minimum number. We also offer alternative therapies for pain, psychosocial type alternatives, physical therapy. Just the simple understanding that narcotics don't necessarily treat pain. They make you feel better, but they don't treat it. And that, yeah, you're injured and you're going to have pain the rest of your life. How do we help you live with that? We actually had one of our researchers, Dr. Scherer, just recently published an article linking opiate use to depression. And as you know, in veterans, it's a very relevant problem for us with PTSD and depression and suicides. And so we take all those things seriously, and we not only do the research, we do the clinical functions.
Yeah, well, part of this investigative report certainly indicated that distribution of these particular medications seem to be connected with an elevated suicide rate, which is obviously a disaster.
Absolutely. It's a national crisis. VA is taking a lead on trying to be one of those organizations that is responsibly managing those. You know, we don't want our veterans to be in pain. Absolutely not. But we also don't want them to be addicted or to be going down a pathway that will lead to social destruction.
So with regard to this now and with regard to the distribution of these medications, how has it changed?
It's changed in a lot of different ways. All of our patients that are on chronic medications undergo what we call a pain contract. And we come into an agreement with either a primary care provider or if it's above their level, we have pain specialists. And we come into an agreement with you as if you were one of my patients, we would have a written agreement where I'm the only doc you're going to see for pain. You know, you can't go doctor shopping and you can't do anything else. And I will take care of your pain and we will come to a mutually acceptable agreement on how we're going to do that. We offer the alternative therapies. And in a lot of cases, we have restrictions on how we manage chronic pain. We don't give narcotics every day the way we do it. We have drug abuse screening protocols so that we know that people aren't abusing them or aren't misusing them, selling them on the streets. We have very strict guidelines on how we do these type of things.
So is it less of a problem now than it was 6 months ago?
Absolutely not. Yeah. It's a chronic problem that's going to be there for a long, long time. And we have the procedures in place that we're constantly modifying and improving on to control it. You know, our veterans go off to wars, they get injured, they get, put their life on the line, and they come back with some very disfiguring both physical and mental injuries. And we need to be able to treat them. And as the science improves and science changes, we have more and more options to do that without using drugs like narcotics.
And that's precisely why so many people are concerned about all of this and why it gets so much attention, because they are service people and have served the country, and they come back and they find the delays in getting treatment and they're maybe being overprescribed. And some have suggested that the overprescription is just kind of a lazy way of dealing with pain.
That's certainly a concern. And it, like I say, it's a national concern. Our doctors, our nurses, and our PAs, and our NPs, and our mental health providers, our whole team. And that's kind of what's unique about the VA is we have a team approach to all of these different things. It's not like you just come in and see your doctor. You see your team of providers that are there who can assess all of the different things. Because it's not just coming in that 30-minute appointment with your doc. It's you got a life. You know, and what is it, the stressors that you have out there? Are you homeless? You know, do you have mental health problems on top of it? Are you have problems with your wife or your kids or whatever? And our team approach to dealing with these patients can really take it in so that we have some pretty good success rates.
Sure, but a lot of the concern is getting that 30 minutes with the doc. Sometimes it seems to take so long before that opportunity presents itself, which I guess explains why the customer service ratings have been typically and traditionally low for the VA.
We run about 60% right now, and it's an annual rate.
What does that mean, 60%?
60% satisfaction rate is kind of our across the board, and that's across the nation.
Wow, that seems to me to be some number. 60% satisfaction, that means 40% dissatisfied.
Well, yeah. I mean, you can look at it a lot of different ways, and it's broken down into how did I interact with my doctor today? You know, was the noise when I was an inpatient too loud, or was it not quite enough? Or, you know, was my food hot or warm? So there, you've got to dig down into the data to understand it. So our rating is not where we want it. We certainly can improve on it. We're certainly working on it. Our goal, and this is a goal driven by the secretary, is to provide proactive, personalized, patient-driven care. And all of those things, they're not just words. It's, you know, if you're coming to see me again, if I'm your doctor, You want my care to be tailored to you. You want it to be proactive. I want my patients, I don't really want them in my hospital. I want them out being productive, fulfilled, and happy. And if they're sitting in my waiting rooms doing things, they're not doing that. So I want to take care of them and keep them out of the hospital.
Senator McCaskill has been dogged in her oversight of what's going on in the VA. And one of her big issues, and this was before you arrived, I certainly have to point that out, concerned the dental clinic, I guess it was, and the pathogen problem there. There were a lot of infections. I know that several million dollars was found to help deal with that. How is it being dealt with? How is that money being spent?
The money's already spent. Basically what it was is we renovated our sterile processing unit, and we've got a brand new state-of-the-art sterile processing unit, which has been in play for probably 9 to 10 months now. Mm-hmm. We had a recent inspection by the VA Central Office on sterile processing, and we have been declared the poster child for how to do it. Mm-hmm. And literally, we are the number one area in the VA for sterile processing.
Certainly an embarrassment, though.
We all have our good days and bad days, and the VA is on its way up.
You know, you're dealing with a broad spectrum. That word has been used a lot during today's total broadcast. A broad spectrum of veterans going back to World War II.
Five generations.
What sort of problems, if any, does that generate for you in treatment and dealing with the different kinds of issues that we would be talking about from those five generations ago and those just back from Afghanistan?
Every patient is different, and that's why we talk about the personalized proactive care. You've got the 90-year-old World War II and Korean veteran who, nation's greatest generation. I mean, they're just incredible people. It's geriatric medicine. They have multiple medical problems. They have mental health issues. So it's a whole different person. And then you've got the younger generation, the OIF, OEF veterans, the 18, 19, 20 years old, who come back with the multiple injuries, the amputations, the PTSD, and those type of issues. And unique to the veteran population now is this latest generation, 25% of our patients are the returning vets are women, which is a new entity to the VA. It seems a little strange in the bigger picture of things, but it's a new entity to the VA. And in the middle of all that, we've got the Vietnam generation, a generation that at the time of that they were in the wars, the country was in a lot of turmoil. Drug use was rampant. The nation didn't support them. They have a lot of mental health issues that are coming back. So all of our providers, all of our staff, we have about 2,400 staff and almost that many volunteers, are all trained to deal with this broad spectrum of care and the specialized care that goes with each different one of them.
That's got to be a huge challenge.
It's a huge challenge, but it's a huge honor, too. I mean, these are our nation's heroes.
I'd like to get our listeners into the conversation as best we can with Dr. Lynn Welling, Chief of Staff for the VA here in St. Louis VA. We have a call from Pacific, Missouri. Tom has been waiting. Tom, go ahead. You're on the air with Dr. Welling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm just curious, do you think that the nature of the recent conflicts that we've had has anything to do with exacerbating some of the mental health issues and other issues that our soldiers come back with? And I just say that simply put from the perspective of, you could as legitimately see us as, quote unquote, the bad guys. In our last two wars, we attacked countries that did not attack us. It was not self-defense. We did it for seemingly economic reasons. Do you think that the soldiers realize this and it exacerbates problems, or what do you think? I'll take my comments off the air. Thank you.
Well, you're asking me for a political opinion, which is not my job to give. But I would tell you that the stressors that our warriors have today are in many cases the same stressors that warriors had back in World War II and the Korean War. You're off. You're in a strange country, a foreign land that you're not familiar with. There are people out there that are doing their best to kill you, and you're there to accomplish a mission. And so obviously that takes a huge toll. I believe the difference between then and now is that we understand it, we accept it, it's more open, and we can give treatment to these folks and get them back to lead that productive, fulfilled, and happy life that they need to have.
We have time for more calls. 382-8255 is the number. That's 382-TALK. Send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org if you'd like. Tweet us at STL on air. What are your biggest challenges now, Doctor? We've talked a lot about past challenges and things that you're dealing with at the present time. But what do you see as your biggest challenges?
My biggest challenge is moving this organization forward. I think we've got a great team of outstanding doctors, nurses, staff that really want to do the right thing for the vets. And what we have to put the infrastructure in place to accomplish that goal. We are creating a lot of different things these days. I talked about the teamwork approach. We have patient-aligned care teams that we put together. And the last caller actually talked about mental health. We have mental health embedded in our patient aligned care teams, our primary care. So you walk into my office to see me, we identify that you may have some depression or PTSD going on, I can get you an appointment within an hour with that mental health provider. We're starting up a cardiothoracic surgery program, a neurosurgery program. So we're taking both the primary care and the specialty care to next levels that we want. We've got a great research program to move forward on and to build so that we can deal with these new situations and the new technology that's out there to help our vets. And then one of our best things is we train the nation's healthcare providers. 75% of all doctors have trained in the VA at some point. And so we need to be able to keep that going and provide that outstanding care, which we do.
Is there a percentage of patients you're dealing with mental health issues as opposed to physical injuries?
Yes, and I can't tell you what it is, but we have...
I'm guessing it's growing. Pardon me for interrupting, but I'm guessing it's growing as a result of our most recent conflicts and the traumatic brain injury and that sort of thing.
Again, I can't tell you that it's growing, but we're recognizing it more. Mm-hmm. And in the old days, you know, you heard of battle fatigue and shell shock.
Sure.
Now that's, you know, roughly correlated with PTSD. Mm-hmm. And so it's those type of things that we recognize, and instead of having people suffer in silence, we can treat them today and get them back to being fully functional and doing the things that they want to do. We see a lot of what we call in the profession comorbid diseases now. Mm-hmm. So you have not only the medical problems but the mental health problems at mm-hmm. the same time. And because we're the VA, we can treat that at the same time. We can get you in for an appointment for your medical issue and then your mental health.
What about the potential for follow-up? We talked about some of the delays that have existed. What about follow-up for these people with mental health issues?
It's critical, and it's one of those things that we actually have, again, policies and procedures in place. So if you're coming into an inpatient admission, I have a team that is going to call you within a day of your leaving the hospital to make sure that you're doing okay. We have a week you're going to be seen again. In 2 weeks, you're going to be seen again. We have transition teams that take our most fragile patients from an inpatient setting to a home patient setting and actually take care of them at home in an effort to keep them from having to come back and get in the hospital again.
So once you get into the system, you're in and you're being taken care of throughout.
Yes, sir. Yeah, and, right. And the idea is to get you into that system because access is quality of care.
Right. Let's take another call. Aaron joins us from Baldwin. Go ahead, Aaron.
Hi, I'm a Desert Storm veteran and a GI patient there, and I've been going there for about 20 years now. My dad was also a doctor, and I was, when younger, constantly around hospitals with him. And while the majority of my experiences there have been very good or favorable, I've had a few minor incidents that bugged me. But I think the big problem with this discussion nationwide deals partly with the public understanding of the military and partly with the public's understanding of the medical system itself. Many people, veterans included, don't know how to talk to doctors or understand what they're being told. So that's part of the problem. But a lot of the problems you're having with the VA system, you also have with civilian hospitals. There's a lot of staff infections. There's a lot of times where people go in for very minor things but have something major go wrong there. The problem is that since 9/11 and dealing with the veterans coming back, everyone's focused on giving the veterans the best care, so any minor problem gets highlighted and exposed to everybody where you don't necessarily see that throughout the rest of the population.
Aaron,
I'm not saying there aren't any problems.
Aaron, let me stop you there because time's getting away. I want to give Dr. Welling a chance to respond. Your thoughts to what Aaron is saying?
I think, Aaron, you're right on. And I think the point I would take out of everything that you're saying is we need to teach our doctors to listen better and we need to teach our patients to talk better. It's a communication type thing. And if I want to give you personalized care, I've got to be able to reach out to you. It's that generational thing again. You talk differently to a 90-year-old guy than you do to an 18-year-old guy. Totally different.
Well, that certainly is understandable. I think we have time for one more call. Let's bring in Tina calling from St. Louis. Go ahead, Tina.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I am a registered nurse. I've worked with people in pain for about 17 years now, and I am also the parent of a 22-year-old who has dealt with chronic pain almost daily for the last 12 years. And she has very significantly fallen through the cracks, but it's not for the medication management. In addition to other treatment modalities, I don't think that I would have her alive at this point. And I'm very concerned with the connection that people are making between opiate use and depression. Can we really say that a person who has pain every day wouldn't be depressed? I mean, you can't take that out of the equation. And I also see an off, being an advocate for her as I am for my other patients. I'm currently working in a hospital.
Hey, Tina, time is getting away. Let's give the doctor a chance to address your main point there.
And I think, Tina, you're again right on. As pain is a multimodal problem, and it takes a multimodal approach. And proper medication managed along with proper therapy and proper counseling and proper evaluation is all critical. So you can't just throw, you know, a magic pill. It's not going to go away. It's got to be a program to handle these things.
We have less than a minute left. We have a call I can't take because of time asking, how do you confirm PTSD?
You see your mental health provider. I think that's the best answer for you.
It is a toughie. There's no question about that.
Absolutely.
Final thought you'd like to leave us with? I know we talked a lot about the negatives, and there are positives, obviously.
The reason I came to the VA is my personal mission is to take care of those who goes in harm's way. And this is how I get to do it now that I'm off active duty and I'm a veteran myself. We are a great organization with great people. We want more people to come to us, both as patients and both as providers. So anybody out there that wants to work for the VA or wants to volunteer or is involved as a veteran in the new healthcare issues, we're the guys to take care of you.
Okay. I'm sure you would have them go to your website to make the initial contact. We'll put a link to that website on ours at stlpublicradio.org. Dr. Lynn Welling, thank you so much for being with us. It's been a pleasure meeting you, and I know you've got a tough job, but keep it going.
I enjoy it.
I'm sure you do. Thanks, sir, for being with us. Join Steve Potter tomorrow for Cityscape, and he'll talk about the 22nd Annual International Film Festival, a festival, that is, Serendipity Gallery's opening installation featuring a vintage cigarette machine that dispenses art, and Mustard Seed Theater's production of an a cappella musical based on the true story of a World War I Christmas truce. Monday on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk about STL Village's efforts to help people stay in their own homes as they age. Then we'll take a look at how the Six String Guitar Heroes, that program, and how it helps veterans. You familiar with that, Doctor?
Yes, I am.
Tune in next week. Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis On the Air is produced by Mary Edwards, Alex Hoyer, production assistants from Camille Phillips, Aaron Dorr, Jeremy Bailey, Kristen Torres, and Spencer Reed, executive producers Robert Peterson. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.